It's Thursday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. Jules, we have a huge show coming up. Super League, Champions League.
Yes.
But shall we start with the meltdown in Madrid?
Shakhtar.
Shakhtar. Oh, man. We'd be so good at Spanish tabloid writers. Joining us is Alex Kirkland. Alex, let's get right into it. What happened?
I mean, what happened was a disastrous 45 minutes of football from Real Madrid. That first half from them was one of the worst I can remember, to be honest. It was a defensive horror show up against a Shakhtar team who, let's not forget, were missing six first-choice players and a number of substitutes as well. Real Madrid were without Sergio Ramos, the captain, and it was just, they fell apart after conceding that first goal. They went completely to pieces. They got some respect back in the second half and pulled it back to 3-2, had a late goal ruled out. But that won't make anyone forget just how bad they were in that first half.
Oh, but they weren't just bad, but sorry. Zidane made some big decisions with a view towards a Clásico at the weekend. He leaves out, and he got slaughtered for leaving out Cruz and Benzema. Alex, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt a tiny bit because I say, hey, it's Shakhtar minus six. You're at home. You're motivated because you had a stinker last weekend against Cadiz and deserve to lose. Maybe this is a good game to give Benzema and Kroos the day off, right?
The problem is when Benzema doesn't play, the team just don't function in attack at all. Luka Jovic again last night. I think he had one pretty tame header on target and that was it throughout the game. And he was subbed off as Real Madrid were chasing the comeback, which tells you everything you need to know. Kroos, you could understand maybe giving him a break. But I think the problem is, as I say, with Ramos already missing, can you really leave out these other kind of pillars of the team? Now, I know that Ramos isn't always the most consistent defender, but you have to think that if he'd have been there, he's got this slight knee problem. He wouldn't have let the game just get away from them the way it did in the first half. And the other defenders, I mean, Rafael Varane, he was dreadful. And this is the second dreadful Champions League game in a row for him, because let's not forget, he was to blame for both the goals they conceded against City in the summer. Alongside him, Eder Militao still looks nothing like being worth the 50 million euros that Real Madrid played for him. Marcelo, I love Marcelo, but he, to be honest, looked like almost an ex-player.
He kind of jumped the shark a while ago. Come on.
I mean, actually, Ferland Mondi was played out of position, was probably the only one who got away with any credit on the right-hand side. Courtois got them out of trouble a couple of times. It wasn't just that Shakhtar made three chances and took them. I think there were three one-on-ones that Courtois managed to save over the course of the 90 minutes. So it could have been even worse.
I mean, last season, they lost 3-0 the opening game in the Champions League in Paris. They had a really rocky start of the season, didn't they?
Yeah, it was there.
And yeah, they came back.
They weren't playing Shakhtar Donetsk.
No, I know, but let me finish. They still won the La Liga that season. So I don't think like a shaky start like this one is anything new for Zidane or for the club. However, I think Zidane is making mistakes. I think the players certainly are not up to the task mentally, physically, and technically as a group. Let's not forget they didn't sign anyone in the summer. A few of their players left. But how much pressure is Zidane really under, Alex? Because he's Zidane, of course, and everything that he's achieved as a player, as a manager for that club is huge. But that's two defeats in a row now, albeit in two different competitions. And then the Clásico coming at the weekend. What happened if they lose that? It's three in a row. Or do you still think that he still has enough credit in the bank to last regardless of what happens at the weekend?
Of course, he's got a lot of credit in the bank. He's got more credit than anyone because of what he's done. But I do think that Zidane's situation is somewhat unique because even though he's won two league titles as a coach, even though he won those three Champions Leagues in a row, there are still some nagging questions, I think, and maybe legitimate questions about aspects of the job that he does. And some people, and this includes people at the club, at Real Madrid, at the Bernabeu, question exactly how good a coach he is, despite everything that he's achieved in terms of trophies won. I don't think there's any risk of him being sacked in the short term. But with Zidane, what I would say is that you can never entirely rule out the risk of him deciding to walk away if things aren't going well and if he feels like he's not the right man for the job. He surprised us, remember, when he walked away last time, having just won the Champions League. I'm not saying I expect that to happen right now, but I don't think it's something that we can discount entirely because he is a bit of a different coach. He doesn't necessarily need, you get the feeling he doesn't need it in the same way that other coaches do, you know? Yeah, and if he feels like I say, he's not the right man for the job, he would walk.
I completely agree that he would walk away. Oh, he could pull a Keegan and say, like, I've taken this as far as I can go.
I mean, yesterday, I would point out after the game, he said, like, tomorrow is going to be sunny. I'm like, who can come out with a defeat like this? And
I would point out that when he walked away last time, it's because two of his superstars, neither of whom is there anymore, both kind of threw hissy fits and threw their toys out of the pram after the game. And he said, all right, you know, enough of that. I'm out. But Alex, thank you so much, and stay tuned. Classico. I have a feeling we'll be talking about this on Monday. All right, podcast listeners, you're lucky because you get a little bit of extra intimate content.
Extra Alex Kirkland as well.
And some more Alex Kirkland. All right. No, he's not an off-brand Sid Lowe. He's much better, more concise.
Younger as well.
Yeah. All right, let's get more into this as the approach to the Clásico, because Jules asked on the TV portion about how much pressure he was under. I'm interested in one answer you gave, that this perception of Zizou, that he's not a good coach, he just lets them play and whatever else, because I'm going to show my bias here. Zizou is a child of many people, but a child of Carlo as well.
Of course. Carlo's
had the same thing. Is this the kind of thing that, like, that when Real Madrid win, he gets praised? Oh, look, he just lets them play because they've got, you know, they've got great players. He doesn't screw anything up. And when they lose, they say, oh, no, it's his fault because he just lets them play. He doesn't give them instruction. Because if anything, what I've seen from Real Madrid this season, towards the end of last season, I've seen him play different formations, different setups, put people in different positions. And, you know, and then the 4-3-3 and the 4-2-3-1 and Jovic and Benzema together. So which is it? Or is it just that, you know, let's just find a stick to beat him with?
I think he just lets them play stereotype is a little bit unfair, to be honest. I think, of course, I don't think that you can get to do what he's done just by letting them play, however good your players are, even if you've got some of the best in the world, even if you're an icon like Zidane. I don't think you can just let them play and get the results that they've got. I think there is more to him as a coach. And you're right, we have seen a lot of tactical variation from Zidane. In fact, at times, another criticism that he faces is that he switches things around too much, that he rotates too much, pretty much constant rotation. He said he believes in that. He thinks it's necessary over the course of the season. That's not going to change. But he does switch systems as well and formations. He's talked about formations being less important than maybe some of us make them out to be. So that's another criticism that he faces too. I do think that there is a lot more to him as a coach, but there are times when it feels like he doesn't necessarily know how to change things during a game. I mean, we saw in La Liga against Cadiz last weekend, he made a quadruple halftime substitution, and that had some impact, but that was more a case of just changing players rather than necessarily changing things within the team. And in this Champions League game, I mean, he brought on Benzema at halftime, and he brought on Vinicius Junior. He made an instant impact, scoring inside 14 seconds. But there isn't always a feeling that Zidane necessarily has an idea of how to change things effectively in game. So I think some of that criticism is fair. I think some of it is unfair. But what I can tell you for sure is that throughout his two spells at Real Madrid, there have been these doubts, and this goes right up to the highest level of the club, about just how good a coach he is. And you're right, that varies with the results. Right. You know, and it's unfair and it's fickle. When things are going well, those doubts quieten down, and the moment that things start to wobble a little bit, they rise back to the surface.
You know what? I'm going to hand it to Jules, but I got to ask you this whole thing about the people at the highest level who've had doubts. Who's the last Real Madrid manager? How far back do you have to go to find a guy where they didn't have doubts about the manager? I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah, even Jose, I guess.
Well, you got to go. They had doubts of Jose from after 12 months. You got to go all the way back. I mean, that's all I want to say. But,
maybe Del Bosque is probably the
Mr. Potato Head.
Mr. Potato Head.
Well, Del Bosque suffered the same thing, right? Del Bosque faced the same kind of doubts and questions, and people said that pretty much similar things to what they say about Zidane. People said that Del Bosque wasn't enough of a coach, and was maybe took too much of a step back and allowed the players to do their own thing. So in a way, I think there are a lot of parallels between Del Bosque and Zidane now.
The issue I had watching the Cadiz game at the weekend, watching again last night, is a mentality issue. It looked to me like they were completely underestimating those two teams, that they come onto the pitch thinking, do you know what, this is going to be easy. We're going to do what we used to do before when Ronaldo was there, for example, where even if you were not playing well, you would find a way at some point to win. It was ugly at times, but the win was the most important.
And that, Jules, was different from what we saw earlier in the season. Obviously, they were either dropping points or they were getting close shave results. They weren't playing great. They weren't scoring. But I don't think they had the mentality rubbish that they had that showed against Cadiz and against Shakhtar. Am I wrong, Alex?
I think that's true. Do you know what? Being at the game against Shakhtar last night, I was thinking about this. And I was wondering about if it's in circumstances like this that the lack of fans in the ground makes a difference. Because I felt like if that game last night had been played at the Bernabeu and there were tens of thousands of fans there, when Madrid conceded a first goal, you know what the fans are like at the Bernabeu.
Bañolada.
Exactly. They get their white handkerchiefs out. Would the fans have allowed that game to slip the way that it did in the first half? And was it more difficult for Madrid to kind of shift the momentum of the game?
I know, but you've been playing like this for 8 months. This is not your first game that you play at the training ground in a smaller stadium with no fans in. You're used to it. Now, surely you won La Liga by putting that incredible run at the end after the restart in exactly those conditions. And there were games where they were difficult for you. So that whole argument or excuse about, yeah, but look, you know, it's the conditions. I'm not buying it. I just don't think they were ready. I think Valverde is nowhere near at the level he was last season. Same with Casemiro. There's a lot of players. I mean, what happened to Rodrigo? A year ago, he was scoring 3 goals against Galatasaray in the Champions League. Now he can hardly put 2 dribbles together.
He's still a teenager, Jules.
I know, but I don't care. You know, there's a point where I'm happy to blame Zidane, and you know how much, obviously, he's my guy. But there's also a point where we have to look at the player. How come Marcelo is still playing?
I think there's one culprit, and I think it's entirely his fault, and that's Gareth Bale. He's down North London.
And James Rodriguez.
And James. Well, no, I know, because we like James, because he's handsome and whatever. He doesn't play golf. He doesn't have the stupid man bun. It's all Gareth Bale's fault. we're kidding here. It does go deeper. I do want to make one last point on this, because this came up in extra time last night, and it's so incensed me that I'm going to use my bully pulpit now to repeat it again. I got criticism from people who said, like, oh, why do you let Zidane off the hook after two defeats, two horrible performances like this? If that had been Solskjaer or Ronald Koeman, you would have been all over him, criticizing him mercilessly, blah, blah, blah.
Have they won 3 Champions League? Have
they won 2 leagues? Exactly. So, Alex touched upon it before when he talked about credit in the bank. Let's be very clear on this. When Real Madrid play badly and Zidane's in charge, I have no problem criticizing him. We criticized him after the Cadiz game. We're criticizing him now. There's things he could have done differently. But wash your mouth out with soap, okay? if you're going to mention Zidane with Solskjaer and Ronald Koeman in the same sentence, in terms of achievements at this club, in this club culture. The man has 2 Liga titles and 3 Champions League titles. He has built up an enormous amount of credit, which the other two people simply do not have yet. Maybe one day they'll get it, but they're not there yet. It's as simple as that. It's a track record.
Just quickly before we leave, what about the Clásico? If you're Zidane and if you're Real Madrid, how do you approach that game? Do you go, okay, let's play safe. Let's just not lose, okay? You put, I don't know, let's say a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1, for example. You put Isco behind Benzema, I don't know, and then you've got 4 with Casemiro, Modric, Cruz, and Valverde, I don't know, whatever, you know, and you do that? Do you think Barca, the way they're playing, you could get at them? They've got a lot of space behind that back four. Their defense is still not good enough.
I don't think you overcomplicate it. This is it. The back four, Casemiro, Valverde, Cruz in midfield, Benzema, Vinicius, and then the third one, I'm tempted because, you know, I'm an Isco guy.
Yeah.
I like the idea of Isco, and then you can slot into a 2 when you need to, whatever. Just keep it simple. Just play your best players. Those are their best players, right, Alex? I'm not wrong?
I mean, Zidane does tend to go for an extra midfielder in the biggest games.
Thank you.
Against the best teams.
But let it be Isco. Let it be Isco.
Isco that played against Cadiz. It was not Isco. It was more
He'll be more motivated against Barcelona. Isco. What can I tell you?
Alex, how do you think he will approach that game?
I think he'll stick with the old guards. I think he'll stick with the players that he trusts. I don't think there'll necessarily be any big surprises. I'd say that, look, I mean, I know Barca had a big win in the Champions League in midweek, but let's not forget that Barca lost in La Liga last weekend too to Getafe. I think Koeman's Barca are still a bit of a work in progress. Messi isn't quite at the at the level they'd like him to be. So I wouldn't say that, I mean, sure, Barca, I think, are favourites going into this game, but I wouldn't say that they are overwhelming favourites necessarily.
Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules, we got them old Super League blues again.
Yeah.
You obviously saw the story earlier in the week. The timing of it is what it is. It's bizarre, but I spent a lot of time on it. I wrote a very long piece, as Adam Moreno might say, about this. Spoke to a ton of people. The takeaways is that if this happens in the next 20 years, it's going to happen now. If it happens.
Why do you think now is the time?
I think because the conditions are right. Because right now you have a situation where the institutions are weak. The day before this story came out, and by the way, people always wonder, how do these stories get out there? You know, Ed Woodward saying the next day, I don't know where the story comes from. Well, I'll tell you where it comes from, Ed. You know it too. It comes from, not from football sources, not from institutional sources, it comes from finance sources. The story that came out here in England on Sky News, that's their business reporter who puts a story out. The story before that, which came out 8 hours earlier in Spain on a website called Voz Populi, that comes from a business reporter who's close to Florentino. So this is obviously, to me, if I had to speculate, this is a financial PR firm or something like that.
And JP Morgan, the bank, seems to be involved in...
JP Morgan are arranging the debt financing. So they're not putting the money in. They're going to their institutional clients, to private equity firms, saying like, oh, we have a big fund here. Do you want to put some money in? And then we figure out what to do with it. The reason the money is important is that if you have a breakaway league, the idea is obviously that the clubs can go and, you know, sell their own commercial rights, sell their own broadcast rights. They don't have to share it with UEFA or whatever else, and with the smaller clubs. But that takes time. And right now, clubs are so strapped for cash, even the big, rich clubs, that they simply can't afford to go for like a year without revenue. So they want somebody who puts up the money up front, who guarantees X amount of revenue. And the way it would work is, they put the money up for, say, a year or two. Once the organization has made that money back, they get paid out or bought out by the clubs, and they go away or retain a small share.
I mean, I like the Champions League. I think until something is broken, you don't need to fix it. However, I think there's a lot of way you can improve the Champions League as the current format. But this Super League has been going on for, what, the last 20 years?
Yeah. See, this is the thing, right? The one thing that everybody who I spoke to told me is everybody's listening. Nobody wants to be left out. Nobody's actively necessarily supporting this, except for perhaps Real Madrid, and I'm pretty sure Joel Glazer is a fan of the idea. But nobody's committing to anything. You know, they're all just saying, okay, because think about it. If you're Bayern Munich or Juventus, somebody comes, hey, look, we're going to make a big Super League. Do you want us to keep you informed and maybe invite you? What are you going to say? No, I would never want to be a part of it. No. So you say, okay. Right now, clubs are in a situation where they will speak to anybody out there. And I think some clubs are in a slightly different position, because if you're Juventus or Paris Saint-Germain, Well, you guys are the ECA representatives on the UEFA board right now.
Indeed, yeah.
If you're Bayern Munich, if you even pretend that you're entertaining the idea, or Borussia Dortmund, even worse, you know, you have the fans up in arms. In Spain, I think the environment's quite different. I think a lot of fans would welcome this, the fans of the big Spanish clubs. Yeah. So I think we'll see how this goes. But
realistically, do you think it could happen?
I think, I said in the piece, it would take three elements for this to happen. Okay, so one is obviously they have to put together a lot of money. And I'm told that, oh, well, the money part is the easy part, right? Okay. Because the private equity firms have a lot of money right now, and they're looking around and they're saying, well, so many sectors are hurting. The entertainment sector, football, is seen as recession-proof.
Yeah.
So that's the easy part. I think you absolutely need clubs to come forward with a united voice and say, yeah, we're doing this. And we're nowhere near that. And it can't just be sort of, you know, Ram, you know, Florentino off the record to his friends in the press. It's got to be like Florentino, Glazer, yeah. Kroenke, whatever, standing side by side and doing this. We're far, far away from that stage. And I think the third key thing is FIFA have to be a part of this. Now, these stories said, oh, FIFA are in favor of it, which makes me a bit suspicious. FIFA, of course, saying, well, we're not commenting on this. This is nonsense. There's other people to deal with it. I think obviously FIFA, like everybody else, they don't want to be left out. I don't think they will be left out, because if you do this without FIFA's permission, I don't think people are very clear on the implications. If you do this while at war with FIFA, then this means no World Cup for the players. It means no international transfers to clubs that are outside the system for the players. It means no domestic football.
Well, a different one, a different version of domestic football.
No domestic football for your club.
Yeah, yeah, for those clubs, yeah.
Because what would happen is if Manchester United, hypothetically, you know, leave and play in the European Premier League and say, oh, but we still want to play in the Premier League here because it's lucrative, FIFA can go to the FA and say, you can't have them in your Premier League because they're a rogue club. And the FA would then go to the Premier League and say, hey, kick them out. And if the FA don't do that, then FIFA can kick the FA out of FIFA.
Much, yeah.
You know, that's kind of the safeguard against it. There is a scenario. There is one mooted scenario. Because I asked myself, why would FIFA be in favor of this other than fear of being left out? This is very conspiratorial, but you might hear this around the call. some people around in UEFA, which is simply that you know, FIFA have talked about or Infantino's talked about maybe the way forward to develop football in Africa and to retain talent is to have an African Super League with super clubs. There's already been talk of a merger between Liga MX and MLS, which would effectively be a CONCACAF Super League. Maybe you create a Super League in Europe, Super Leagues in that answer directly to FIFA, South America and Asia. Maybe you're there, but it's premature.
It's a long way.
We're in the realm of speculation.
It is a long way away. I mean, I like this idea of super leagues everywhere, and then the winner can face each other, or maybe the top two. And I'm dreaming, right? This will happen when I'm like not on this planet anymore. I can't see this happening anytime soon.
Look, I think you have a scenario, right? And this is why people. I mean, I think this brings FIFA into it. Right? You have a scenario where Gianni Infantino spoke, and I think he's 100% correct, that right now we have a situation where rich people from all over the world, rather than investing in their football locally in their continent, what do? They come and spend their money in Europe, right?
Yeah,
because that's where the prestige is. So what he says, and this is the idea behind the Club World Cup, the expanding Club World Cup, is can we help club football grow in the rest of the world? Now, if you're cynical, you also say, okay, fine, but, you know, UEFA makes... European club football is worth something like $22 billion every year. The World Cup is worth around $6 billion every 4 years, right?
Yeah.
So he wants a slice of club football because that's where it is. That's it. If you're going to be cynical about it. Personally, I don't know that the rest of the world needs to follow the model of European football. You know, his suggestion in Africa about a Pan-African league with super clubs who are guaranteed, you know, again,
So they've got a Champions League already. For the people who don't follow
football,
they also have a Champions League already.
Right. But the idea is, if you got the top 20 clubs in Africa to play in a Super League, and you could call it a closed league if you want, but more likely would be something, again, like EuroLeague basketball, where maybe you get a license for 10 years, you get invited or whatever. You know, maybe that could be a right formula. So you have that. You have a Liga MX MLS merger, again, hypothetically, but it is something that's been talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
I suspect it's something CONCACAF as a confederation would probably back. Could you replicate that around the world? And of course, in that, you'd be diminishing the power of the confederations, and specifically UEFA.
Yeah, that was my next question. How much, especially this new European Super League talk, is down to the conflict between FIFA and UEFA? We saw Arsene Wenger slagging off the Nations League the other day, very much as FIFA voice, saying, like, no one understands it, it's pointless, let's have World Cups every 2 years or something like that.
Right.
How much is it down to, and how much do you need a healthy relationship between UEFA and FIFA, considering how important they both are?
So I think, that's a really good question. Without getting too much into the weeds, there's no question that the relationship between Infantino and Ceferin was terrible until maybe a year ago. For different reasons, the Club World Cup was part of it. I'm also told that the relationship between the two is a lot better. At least they're having a continuous dialogue. I think it's been brought on by the pandemic,
where they said
we need to work
together.
They had
together. To, yeah.
You know, FIFA's sitting on a huge pile of money. UEFA isn't. That's why UEFA announced on Monday, a reduction for the next 5 years and Champions League revenues.
Yeah.
But I think, from FIFA's perspective, they're very cognizant of the fact that a Super League like this could potentially be a threat to them as well. So I think it is an issue for UEFA. But remember one other thing, too, as far as Gianni Infantino. Gianni Infantino is not, he's not the king of FIFA. He has to face elections. He's got elections coming up in 2023. So if he does something like this, which angers UEFA and angers South America, because Alejandro Dominguez is in lockstep with UEFA, he might not get reelected the next time around. So for this to work, he's got to convince enough of the rest of the world that, hey, this is a good idea for football, in your neck of the woods. We often see it through the lens of like the big European leagues or the big European countries, those 10, 15 nations. For most of the rest of the world, FIFA is an organization that cuts you a check that basically pays for your entire football program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Men, women, kids. So that's really important. And that's really all they care about is developing and growing their football, which is most likely locally amateur, semi-professional.
If we go back to this European Super League, you made a really good point. And if you can expand on, for some clubs, it would work. And you could see why Man United or PSG and Juventus, with Agnelli being so much involved in the ECA and all of that. But for a club like Barcelona or Real Madrid, who are not owned by a big owner or a big company or whatever, or even Borussia Dortmund and the German clubs, for them, the idea of not having the domestic league to win could be an issue, right?
I think this is the single most important point that I really want to emphasize here, and which for me from the start never really made any sense. So on the one hand, you have the U.S. owners, right, with their point of view, which is, well, this works well in the NFL and the NBA. We have more parity. We have a salary cap. It's profitable for all of us. We take turns winning. I might win every 10 years, every 20 years, and our franchise value rises. That makes a lot of sense if I'm a John W. Henry, if I'm a Glazer, because I own the club. I get the benefit. It's my money that I've invested, and, from their perspective. Let's leave the fans out of it for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, if you're Bayern or Borussia Dortmund or Barcelona or Real Madrid, how does it benefit you, Florentino, if all of a sudden, instead of winning La Liga, every couple of years, every 1, 2, 3 years, or Juventus or Paris Saint-Germain winning every year, all of a sudden you're finishing mid-table year after year. And because there's a salary cap, which is in there because the other clubs want it so to make it profitable, you can't even go and spend your way out of it, right? So Real Madrid as a club might all of a sudden have more revenue, which they reinvest or whatever. But how does it actually benefit you? Won't people be coming to you and saying, well, hang on a minute, why did you put us in this situation? Why aren't we winning? You know, fire Zidane, fire this one.
And again, like you said, Barcelona and Real Madrid have elections. You know, the fans vote for who they want to run the club.
Precisely.
So you put your position into risk.
And they're not going to be impressed by the fact that you've made $100 million in revenue because at those clubs, you want every penny reinvested in your club. Exactly. But again, if you have a salary cap aimed at parity, which is ultimately what makes the NFL work, or it can be a luxury tax or whatever, you can't even do that. And you're competing against Manchester United and Manchester City. I mean, it doesn't, I don't get the logic. I think right now they're in the situation where they're scared and it's more a case of nobody wants to be left out.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of many reasons why I have a lot of question marks about this project. Right, enough Super League. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United go into your house, Jules, and beat Paris Saint-Germain. Are you going to just blame this on the absences and also on Thomas Tuchel? Are you going to show Solskjaer some love and respect?
I'm going to start with the love. Solskjaer, well played. Great game plan. He worked the back five first, then Pogba coming on, moving to a back four, playing high up on the pitch. Well done, United. PSG was shocking. That was shocking. The word is shocking. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. That's it. Yeah,
makes sense.
Lazio were horrible at the weekend, losing to Sampdoria. But hey, they beat up Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League 3-1. Gab, which is the real Lazio and which one is the real Dortmund as well?
The real Lazio, I would like to hope, is this one. Luis Alberto, by the way, phenomenal. Ciro Immobile against his old club. How about that? I love that. Dortmund, I think, need to figure a few things out because I think they looked lax at the weekend and then they had to bring in the cavalry to win. Here, they were making silly mistakes and playing without the intensity, I think, that Lazio had anticipated. Bayern Munich road grade Atletico Madrid and El Cholo Simeone. Jules, easy question. Are Bayern the best team in the world by some distance, as suggested on the show last night?
Yeah, I know, but I'm surprised you still even ask me the question. Are they still the best in the world? You know, are they the best? Of course they are, and by a distance, although I don't think the score...
By a smaller distance than people think, I think.
Yeah, maybe, but the score didn't really reflect the game, because Atletico actually didn't play that badly, but Bayern was so clinical.
Kingsley Coman, baby.
Coman is the man. Liverpool get 3 points away to Ajax thanks to a weird Tagliafico own goal. Klopp called the win a bit dirty. Do you agree?
Yeah, he made it dirty in a good way.
They didn't play good.
Yeah, I mean, look, Fabinho had to make that save at the end. He basically used a term. It was important after the Van Dijk thing, important to start the season well. They haven't always played well in group stages in the past. And he said, you know, you feel a little bit dirty, a bit smash and grabby, but hey, that's all you care about right now. Barcelona destroy Ferencvaros 5-1. Jules, is your faith in Koeman rekindled? And how are they looking ahead of the Clasico?
I mean, no. I mean, okay, yeah, you won, and five different goal scorers. That's good for everybody's confidence. And Ousmane Dembele scored, and you benched Antoine Griezmann, and Messi, I thought, played a bit better, but you also conceded a big chance earlier on and a goal that was offside, slightly offside. Then they hit the post at 0-0. And then Piqué got sent off for like a stupid foul when you're 3-0 up. I mean, I still think there's a lot of issues there. A
lot of chaos.
And it's not good before Clásico, that's why.
Okay, can we celebrate Pedri, the new wunderkind? The guy shows up at 70. The ground. He's carrying his stuff in a plastic bag. He doesn't have the Louis Vuitton dop kit like everybody else does. And afterwards... He's in a taxi rank, trying to get a taxi because
not even
his family's there to pick him up because his family are all still in the Canary Islands.
I absolutely love that. And also, he's making great impact. He was good against Getafe and he was good again. Sticking with Barcelona, Antoine Griezmann called out an article in a mainstream Spanish newspaper calling it racist against Ansu Fati.
Yeah, so basically, the newspaper was ABC. One of their writers, Sosteres, I used something which I think is completely inappropriate, which he compared Ansu Fati's speed with it's going to get lost in translation, but essentially it's basically the speed with which illegal immigrant street vendors run away when the police shows up.
But like, who writes that? This is 2020.
And who approves it? And this is so loaded because obviously not only is Ansu Fati a person of color of African descent, but he's also Spanish. You know, he is Spanish. He plays for the Spanish national team. Everything about this is wrong. Well done, Antoine Griezmann, for flagging it and speaking out here.
Yeah.
Mesut Ozil has been left out of both the Premier League and now the Champions League squad as well at Arsenal. Jules, it's not entirely unpredictable that it would end this way, but it still kind of hurts, and his reaction didn't take it well.
No, and it's really sad. It's really sad. Of course, we kind of saw it coming. I think Mesut knew that was coming as well. I'm not really sure where the sort of breakdown in relationship with Arteta is, and what happened exactly. Is it over the pay cuts? Is it over other things, attitude? I don't know what it is. If it's because he doesn't fit in the team, I don't know. But I just think such a talent being wasted like this, such a sad situation to end up a career like you did at a club after so many years. I just don't think he reflects good on anyone anyway.
I have 2 points to make here. One, and this may be Arsenal's goal in this, is they want him to rescind his contract, cancel the rest of his contract, and walk away. Right. So this whole Ozil, like, I'm so sad. Ozil's not crying that he's being deprived of playing football. And those who had that point, if he wants to play football, he can cancel his contract, give up the rest of the money.
And he could have left in the summer.
He could have done that before the summer. Equally, I think the club owe a credible explanation, because this whole thing with him not accepting the pay cut straight away, him saying, no, why don't we wait until later, see what the sums are, let's defer the payments for now. And also the business with his criticism of human rights in China, whatever. This needs to be clarified, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Because otherwise the lingering doubt will all remain.
Yeah, you're right. Manchester United revenues falls by more than 20% or 120 million gap because of the pandemic, as they announced losses of £23 million. It makes sense that the Glazers, though, take a £20 million dividend?
Of course.
Of course it does.
Course it
Why are you
sense?
Questioning? Who are we questioning here?
Look, whatever. The Glazers have their business model. They really don't care about it. I think people said they've taken out more than $1 billion in fees and whatever. The Glazers, if they care, they might say, oh, yeah, but look, we make United profitable every year, despite the rubbish that we serve up, that our managers and players serve up on the pitch. So really, we should get paid. I don't know. Like, I think, if anything, this tells you the might of Manchester United. Because after a season like this, to have to have revenue only go down 20% when you've got a 70,000-seat stadium, it's
incredible.
It's pretty remarkable. But it does tell you that if they get hit and they're the biggest dog of them all, revenue-wise, or profit-wise,
just imagine
anyway,
all the others.
Imagine the others. Yeah. Atalanta pick up where they left off, putting four past Midtjylland on the road. Jules, you love this, don't you? You love the fact that Miranchuk is the Russian Ilicic.
Oh, my God, that goal, that left foot finish in the top corner. Amazing. 27 times since Gasperini is in charge, that they score four goals or more. 27 times. I mean, they're just a machine going forward. Zapata, Luis Muriel, Papu Gomez with a lovely goal, one of the goals of the night. It's fantastic when they play like this. I still can't work my head around how they could have lost so heavily to Napoli and being so abject, but hey, I guess they would take a lesson from it and
bounce back city, baby.
Alvaro Morata scores two as Juventus beat Dynamo Kiev away in Ukraine. Gab, could he be more important to Pirlo than we thought he would?
More important in the sense that he is the only center forward on the only proper, genuine center forward on this team. Possibly. I think, look, Juve, I've said this before, they're a work in progress. I think some of the criticism directed at Pirlo after Crotone was unfair. They got the job done. It's a big win. It's important that they stabilize in the Champions League. So big for them and big for Morata.
Good win.
Manchester City go a goal down and end up beating Porto 3-1. Jules, it took them a little while to get going.
It did. Again, they conceded that first goal after a poor ball by Ruben Diaz. Luis Diaz scored a wonderful goal, to be fair, far too easy the way he went around the
defense.
You're going to
blame Ruben Diaz for the fact that the dude comes and beats three guys?
Okay, so if you listen to me,
that's a great finish.
If you listen to me, you blame Ruben Diaz for losing the ball in the way he did, and then you blame the whole back four for like letting Luis Diaz scoring the goal the way he did. I just think there's a lack of fluidity in that team. There's a lack of creativity.
No De Bruyne, no party.
No, you're probably right. I just think he tried again a few things. He changed halftime, made little tweaks. The second half was a bit better, to be fair to them. I just think there's something missing. You know, the fullbacks don't bring anything anymore going forward. Bernardo Silva, I still think he's a bit short.
Maybe it's because one time Cancelo plays on the right, then he plays on the left, and he doesn't play for a month. Let's give him a little.
Yeah, I know. And they won. And that's like Pep said after the game, that's the most important. Inter draw with Borussia Mönchengladbach 2-2 at the San Siro. But Gab, it could have been worse. And it was not great enough for Arturo Vidal.
It wasn't a great night for Ashraf Hakimi either, of course, who tested positive and was out. We saw our old buddy Matteo Darmian start, incidentally. Look, I mean, Inter I thought, played for an hour, and then they make individual mistakes, which cost them. Like you said, Vidal giving away the penalty. Yeah. On the second goal, the Hoffman goal, I know people said, but it's when a midfielder ends up turning into a defender. He ends up playing him off on side. The ball just goes past him. It's some kind of massive brain fart. I don't know.
Yeah.
What I do know is, I don't know, maybe Vidal should be starting two games in a row. I don't. Positives, Eriksen started. He's not fully on Conte's naughty step.
Two more goals for Lukaku.
That's par for
that's
the course.
That's the norm, you're right.
You know, that's the norm now. IFAB look likely to trial concussion substitutions in the new year. Jules, is this a good idea?
I think so, Gab. So it would be like an extra substitution. It won't be part of your normal substitution. I just think that concussions in football especially have been not taken seriously enough so far. You know, we've seen players, I remember Hugo Lloris, and he said he was fine about it, but being concussed and still being allowed to go back onto the pitch.
Our colleague Taylor Twellman obviously feels very strong, has campaigned very, very seriously for this.
And I just think it's right for IFAB, for FIFA, UEFA, all the deciders to start, having a proper look into it. And I think this could help massively.
I think my issue with this, as ever, is, you know, who decides if there's a concern? It's important to have the protocol right? But
which you already have, by the way.
If it's going to be the team doctor, I'm not super comfortable with that.
I'm not
super comfortable with a team doctor, having to go and tell a player, I'm fine. You know, I know there's medical ethics and everything, but we've seen it before. We've seen it in World Cups where people who are in no condition to go out there get sent back out there. So, but it is a step forward where hopefully people, will take responsibility when you know you can bring somebody else on. And by the way, Jules, you know what I don't want to hear? I don't want to hear these people coming out saying, but now people are going to fake concussions so that when they run out of substitutions, come on, man.
Chelsea and Sevilla draw 0-0. Gab, is Lampard a little too happy about keeping a clean sheet?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by all the positivity out there. Oh, look, we kept the clean sheet at home against Sevilla. Now, of course, it only that hasn't happened very often this season. So maybe that is something to celebrate. They have a huge game coming up against United this weekend. You can see the logic. You can see why he did that after giving up those three goals against Southampton. But look, I think the bar is set much, much higher for Chelsea, and this is still a work in progress. And I want to see Tammy Abraham on the pitch a little more often. And or Giroud, the very handsome Giroud.
But it helps when you have a real goalkeeper in goal.
Jules, horrible story out of League 2. Social midfielder Usainu Tune.
Tune,
all right, there you go. Is accused of biting Valenciennes keeper Jérôme Prior. What happened?
Incredible story. You're right. At the weekend between Sochaux and Valenciennes, where at the end of the game there was a brawl between the players, and then Jérôme Prior's cheek was bleeding. He said that Tune bit his cheek. Tune said that it was there was an argument because he was racially abused by Prior through the whole second half of the game. We're not really sure exactly what happened. You can't see it on television. We didn't really hear any racial abuse either during the game. But the discipline committee in France will have a look into it. But regardless of what exactly happened, this is an incredible story.
Incredible.
Gab, we know just how unpopular Valencia's board is with the many fans. So what have they done to let them know?
Well, they hired a mariachi band to basically go outside their offices, outside where they go have lunch, essentially to follow them around and serenade them. I think this is brilliant. I think it's a way to go. Guys, if you don't like your board, you don't like your chairman, your owner, stick with it. It's no death threats, no violence. Just have a freaking mariachi band following them around.
Sing the protest.
All right, this brings us to an end. Jules, shall we come back and do this on Monday?
Yes, it's going to be a big show as well.
Post-classical. All right, till then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.